Hello and welcome to the Infomoto podcast presented by Autoglim. Kicking it old school today, Spannerman and Snag. Catching up in the new year, first podcast of 2026. Good to see you, boys.
Nice to see you too, Spence.
Good on you, Spence. No worries. Away we go, son.
What do you reckon?
Well, look, I'm very pleased to see Grants hasn't got burnt up in the fires up there.
Up in Castlemaine.
Castlemaine, which is up the road, isn't it?
It was close. It's about 8K from Harcourt. And it was all wind dependent. If the fire had started below us, the wind would have pushed it through Castlemaine. Castlemaine was fortunate. Harcourt wasn't.
Yes.
Because the fire started there and got pushed over.
What started the fire? The dry lightning? They don't know.
Well, yeah, the jury's still out on this. There's too much else going on for them to be investigating this.
Yes.
But it's curious that there's been no talk of arson or anything like that at this stage.
Right.
But there was a lot of dry lightning, and
yes,
there were a lot of reasons why any small ember would have started the fire. It's been very dry up there.
Yeah, it's a big thing. It's not to be joked about. It's a bloody nightmare for people up there, for many places around Victoria and sort of southern New South Wales to some point.
Yep. Big in Victoria.
But yeah, big in Victoria.
Victoria's always been like this. So.
Yep. I remember when I've been out on a couple of my rides recently, I've noticed how
dry everything is.
Well, the dry, it's green and then it's really dry.
It goes from green to fire tinder in about a week.
Yes. Yeah. Especially with those 40s.
Yeah.
So our thoughts are with people that are going through these things. And one of the things you do see is people rise to the occasion. I always see, the good in people in situations like this.
Yeah, well, the community's been terrific.
Yeah.
And will continue to be terrific. But the people who've lost their houses and lost their businesses, it's not something that lasts a week. It's something that is going to last them for years and years.
Yes. Well, we'll have to get up there and spend some money.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Yeah, go and buy an apple. I'm only buying local wine at the moment. It's killing me because it's more expensive than the normal rubbish I buy. Yeah.
See, if that was killing you, you would think it's more about the volume of wine than the cost of the bottle.
Well, yes, there's that.
If it's killing you.
There's that, yes.
So it's, I'd be looking elsewhere for the source of my issue there, but...
Really?
Probably a bit late. Ship has sailed, hasn't it?
Well, yeah.
On a bubbling sea of spumante.
You find your pleasure where you can.
You do. Now, Grant, because we're into the new year and, the great juggernaut that is the Australian motorcycle landscape, everyone's getting back from their holidays and getting into gear. I thought, you've always told me over the years that you've...
people are coming back from holidays.
Coming back from holidays and we've got to get sort of started and get the year underway. But I thought, you know how over the years you've sort of... said to me that you're a very bright person.
Well, everybody else says that.
Well, they do. That it's a fairly well-known.
I'm like Donald Trump, like everybody tells me I'm one of the most intelligent people.
I know
people.
That. And I was sitting there yesterday thinking, doing a little bit of Kantian philosophy and stuff that I do,
Yep.
And I thought, I wonder if that silly old bastard actually does know a little bit.
Well, how would you find out?
Well, I'm glad you asked because... I very quickly prepared a quiz.
Oh, no.
Now...
Is this another new way of humiliating me on air?
No, I honestly think that you'll blaze through this. And I tried to do it with good intentions. So what I've got is...
Can I call on Spence if I get stuck?
Yeah, Spencer can tell you where you go wrong.
Is it like a multiple choice job or...?
Well, I'm glad you asked that too, Spence.
Good.
What I did was I'm going to ask the question... See if you can answer it off the top, and then if you can't, which I consider probably very likely, you've got A, B, C, or D. You can lock it in, Eddie.
Okay. All right.
And you understand the parameters of the quiz.
I do.
And I've called it something in particular because I think it should have a name, something as auspicious and inaugural as this is. I've called it Spannerman's Super Duper Quiz.
Hey, Autoglim.
Brought to you by Autoglim.
It could be a new board game. Let's see how well you do.
I'm bored already. So
yep, okay, really.
But look, I'll just we'll kick it off, will we?
Yeah, we will.
Now, there's a variety of subjects, mostly motorcycling, funnily enough.
Okay.
Now it's I've got Spannerman's advanced questions here.
Ooh.
So, let's see how advanced you are. Now this is the first question, Grant.
Yep.
First of 10. Then we've got a who am I?
Oh, really?
Okay. And we have a fun fact for each question.
Good.
We've fallen off, haven't we? This is dreadful.
No.
I'm
looking forward to it.
It started poorly and went backwards from there. What's that old saying?
Started with nothing,
Got most of it left. Yep. Now, Spannerman.
Spencer, idea, poorly executed.
You can you can always
yep.
pipe in.
I got my hand on the buzzer.
Yep.
Righto. Question one. Spannerman and Spence, what is the firing order of a typical inline four-cylinder motorcycle engine?
One, four, two, two.
Two, two?
One, four.
It's not a fucking triple. It's a four-cylinder.
One, four, two, three.
Very good. That's absolutely right.
Well done, Grant.
Now, Yamaha's Crossplane R1, of course, uses an irregular firing order. That's one of the ones that breaks the rules. 270 degrees, 180 degrees, 90 degrees, 180 degrees.
Was that a fun fact or is this part of a question?
No, this is a fun fact.
Yeah, good. Yeah,
and it mimics the torque characteristics of V-twin and better rear grip.
And it sounds magnificent, doesn't it?
Sounds
like a twin.
I had a feeling there was a TVR, I drove a thing called a TVR Chimera.
Yeah.
You know, handmade thing. A dirty big V8, typical Pommy kit car kind of thing, grouse for a week and shit house after that, rattles and bangs and all that, but fast. And I remember the bloke who owned it told me it had an odd firing order and it made it sound like a Messerschmitt.
Yeah.
It was really the most beautiful sound. But I don't think the firing order could have been much chop because I think they're the only one that did it. I think Jaguar had a go at it as well.
Yeah, the Yamaha engine, the flat plane engine, always reminded me of bikes I've owned where two cylinders have gone out.
Yes.
You know, and every time I hear it on full song, I think, oh, there's something wrong with it.
It's not quite right, is it?
Yeah.
And, of course, there was a change to the firing order with Mick's Big Bang two-strokes.
Yes, correct.
And which I think they found accidentally they wired it up wrong. That's the story.
Yeah.
I can't remember the intricacies of it, but I remember that it was supposed to be better on rear tyres or something, wasn't it? I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of witchcraft involved.
So you've got – that's one out of one.
One out of one. Okay, that's good.
So that's 100%, right? Yep. Now, question two, you ready for this?
Yeah, shoot.
Wish I hadn't scrolled past that. This is a schmozzle. Yeah,
shit podcast.
Which motorcycle manufacturer introduced a production bike with adaptive radar cruise control and blind spot detection as standard equipment in 2020?
Oh, it'd have to be BMW, wouldn't it? Spence?
The ACCC came out on the GSA first and it was after 2020. KTM had a blind spot detector too, but...
Well, unfortunately, you're not right. The Ducati Multistrada V4
was
the first one because I remember it. We tested it in the tunnel.
That's right.
And we all thought the blind spot detection thing was a great idea.
Yeah.
And the radar cruise was ridiculous. And now I've got them both on my bike, both fantastic.
Which is not a Ducati.
It's a BMW.
Yeah, so BMW picked it up.
Yes.
Yeah. Or they were probably producing it at the same time, but Ducati beat them to the
marketplace. Well, Ducati were selling them.
Yeah, yep.
You couldn't get them on a 2020 GS.
Right, okay.
All right, so that's a fun fact.
You'll laugh, you'll cry.
So you both got that wrong. Got a sound effect?
Yeah, maybe. Let's see what I got here.
What do you got? Go on.
I got some applause. You're not going to be able to hear it. There's some applause.
Yep, great.
Right.
Yeah, that's great. Good stuff.
Now, this is one for you, Grant, because this is sort of your era.
1930s. 1930s, okay.
Now, you'll have to think about this. I don't want you just... Don't treat this flippantly, please.
I know. I'll
see you in the gift shop
later. I'm doing my best. I got 1.5, I think, so far.
How?
Well, because BMW did introduce that technology not long after.
Who said got it? Who got it first?
Yeah, I know. All right.
Oh, for fuck's sake. So Holden invented the cigarette lighter, did they? Anyway, look, I'm not happy with this. Question 3.
Yep.
Which iconic Australian motorcycle event, first held in 1931, remember, you were a slip of a lad.
Yep.
Is known as the Everest of Australian motorcycling.
The Everest of Australian motorcycling.
Well, I think they're more saying it's the toughest.
Is
1931. It's been going nearly 100 years.
Give me a clue. Is it an off-road or track-based?
It's actually neither.
How can it be neither? Well, what else is there? Off-road or track-based? You know, it's not happening in mid-air, is it?
It's neither. Fuck me.
I quit.
Trials.
The 4-day trial.
Oh, okay.
Right. You've got to admit, it's neither track nor road based.
Yeah.
Well, it's more
rocks and shit.
It's jumping.
It's more off road than it is road.
Yeah, but no, he makes a pretty fair point.
Well, they do them in car parks.
Well, yes, that's true. That's true. What year was the first?
I'm never doing another quiz.
What year was the first Australian Grand Prix? It was very close to that. Held near
Phillip Island?
Goulburn.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
I thought there was that one that ran around the back streets of Phillip Island.
No. Goulburn was the first, or it wasn't. Maruyan, is it? What's the
Maruya?
Name?
Maruyan? Maruyan's on the coast.
No, okay, so it's not Maruyan. No,
Marulan.
Marulan, yeah. So that's where the track is. It's still there.
It's just been done up.
As a track?
Yeah.
Whose phone is that?
I don't know.
Never mind. All right, so I didn't get that one either. So no. I'm 1 out of 3.
All right. Question 4. Now, this is right up your alley because you know how you're good in the shed.
Yes, yeah.
And, you know, this is your sort of claim to fame.
Yep.
So you'll know the answer to this.
Right, good.
What is the standard torque specification range in Newton metres, please, for most motorcycle spark plugs? Now, you can give me a range.
Newton metres.
I'll take a 5 Newton metre range.
Can I do it in foot pounds?
Oh, fuck, then I've got to convert it.
Well.
Spence, can you convert this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can do it.
Newton metres. Well, there's not that much difference really anyway, is there? So let's go for 20 – no, let's go for 18 to 25.
Newton not meters. Bad. Not great.
Not great?
10 to 15.
Ooh. Yeah. So in foot-pounds, that's probably closer to 18, 25. Well, it's
10. Fucking hell. What's the next question?
It'll be 14 to 20, something like that in foot-pounds.
Yeah, but we're talking Newton metres.
Yeah, I know. But you see, you said it would suit my generation.
From here to the shops, what's in a Newton inches meter? Is a lot further.
I have a lot of trouble with decimal currency. You know when the police say, oh, the suspect we're looking for is 183 centimetres, I don't know whether he's a giant or a dwarf.
Yeah.
You know, if they could give it to me in feet and inches, it would be much better.
That's the one exception sort of to the rule.
Well, I don't know.
Well, that's interesting because the TT, they always talk about miles per hour over there, don't they? And the TT.
Oh, yeah.
You always talk about that. And also drag racing.
Yeah.
Yep. They talk in miles and stuff like that. I don't know. It's one of the few, for some reason, that's stuck that way.
Yeah.
Maybe because the Americans dominate drag racing.
Maybe, yeah.
Dominate everything, don't they, Grant?
Yes.
No politics.
All right.
All right, so I'm going to give you half a point.
All right.
And it's just because I feel sorry for you, really.
No. Oh, well, you know, if in foot pounds, I can't
it's
do the conversion.
It's not fucking foot pounds. It's
Yeah, I know.
I can't understand how you can say that, because if I said it's a kilometre to up the street to the shop.
Yeah.
And you said, yeah, it's
100,000
millimetres
of a mile.
A million millimetres.
Yeah.
It'd be the same distance, but it wouldn't be right, would it?
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, well, I've given you half a point. Cop
right,
that.
Good. One and a half. I'm up to one and a half.
One and a half out of five. Four.
Yeah.
Oh, you've got to come home hard.
All right.
In what year did motorcycle racing permanently cease at Mount Panorama, Bathurst, ending the iconic Eastern motorcycle races?
Oh, wow.
Now, you've got four choices if you want.
All right, give them to me. Because I was there for it, but right. I'd been to, say, four prior to that.
Okay. 1995, 1999, 2005, 2008. No rush.
19. Yeah, what's the second one that started with 19?
99.
Yeah. Let's try that.
Oh,
Jesus.
2005. The decision to end motorcycle racing at Bathurst after the 2005 Easter event was hugely controversial.
It was, yes.
Safety concerns and insurance costs were cited as primary reasons, but many riders and fans believe the circuit could have been made safer with relatively minor modifications. I don't know about that.
No, but what they could have done, and it would have been a sensible thing to do, was to do what they do at the Isle of Man for their classic meet, which is say, all right, the cut-off point for bikes is 1975 or something like that. So you'd be racing still. You'd be racing on classic bikes, but you wouldn't be going that fast.
But you still hit concrete walls.
Well, that's true. That's true. But
I think it's runoff is the issue, isn't it?
Well, hitting fixed objects after you fall off is the problem.
And once you get up the top there, you can't. It's got to be walls.
Yeah. Have you ridden it in anger?
No. I've been around it a few times, but you've never been allowed to get up it.
Yeah. It's the dip up the top where you can't see over the edge of the. It's terrifying.
We walk the track backwards, and up the top there, it's hard to walk up.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. But you go off a cliff, basically.
Yeah, you do.
All you see is the little edge of the road.
It's actually surprising that, I mean, I know there was that one really bad year. People listening to this will be yelling. They know a lot more about it than I do. But I know there was that terrible year. Sidecar races and all sorts of stuff went all over the place. But
it's never been as bad as the Isle of Man, though, the TT at the Isle of Man, and that's still running.
Yeah, well, that course causes controversy too, doesn't it? People that don't like it.
Every year it causes controversy. But
there's those that do.
But it doesn't stop people wanting to race there.
If people want to race there, go for it.
Yep. Australia's a bit different, though. We're a little bit more conservative about public risk.
Well, convict stock.
Well, maybe. Anyway, I got that wrong, so moving right along.
Going well. All right. Question six.
I'm going to do a quiz for you next time.
Yeah. Question six. I think these are reasonable questions.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see.
What is the maximum learner approved engine capacity in CCs for Lambs motorcycles in most Australian states?
660. Correct.
I think I've got the answer wrong here. Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. So what have you got?
No, it doesn't matter. You're right.
Yep.
Fun fact. Before Lambs was introduced in 1989 in New South Wales, learners were restricted to 1989? Doesn't sound right, is it?
No, that's probably right? Probably right, yeah.
Learners were restricted to 260cc or less. This meant aspiring riders were stuck on underpowered bikes that struggled to keep up with traffic, which is pretty fair enough too.
Yep.
Unless you're on an RGV.
Well, that was another problem.
Ready to take your life.
There were three bikes that you could buy that were faster than 650s.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But they didn't have any power till you were at 14,000 revs.
If I remember rightly, the early RGVs had 54 horsepower, which came on pretty suddenly too.
Yeah.
Which was more than enough. It was a lot of horsepower for a 250.
A hell of a lot, yeah.
I remember riding one around Phillip Island and at the start, I didn't want to ride it, and at the end, I didn't want to ride anything else.
No, that's right, yeah.
so much fun on a track.
Yep.
The Aprilia RS250 as well.
Yeah, well, that was they ended up being the mainstay of Australian production racing.
Yeah.
It's one bike I really regret that I never owned. You know, to get a that 250, that particular 250, mm-hmm. which had the beautiful Suzuki engine and a beautiful Italian frame.
Yeah, and that was the tail.
It was the pinnacle of
that. Remember that chromey-looking one that looked gross?
Yeah.
Red and chrome. Yeah. And of course, jet black.
Well, you know that Victoria was pretty instrumental in that because the manufacturers didn't want to introduce a learner-approved scheme.
Right.
And so, you know, people like Honda, for example, fought it for ages.
What was the basis of their argument?
Just that they didn't think it could be managed. They didn't think it could be controlled properly. And of course, when a country with such a small population introduces a regulation that can affect manufacturing,
yes,
Honda says, well, are we going to make bikes specifically for this small market? So, you know, they were quite happy with the range of bikes they had.
Yeah.
But eventually the critical mass pushed them over the edge and we got rid of the 250 limit for learner-approved bikes.
I think I remember, again, my memory's foggy, but it might have been New South Wales, I think it was, where they, for a short period, they introduced 80-kilometre-hour speed limit for learners.
Yeah.
Now, if that wasn't made to kill people, I don't know what it was.
You know, who knows what they were thinking, because speed differentials are one of the big causes of crashes on highways.
Yeah, that is so stupid.
Yeah, it is.
I got the ass pretty
so
quick.
Stupid.
Yeah.
I remember that it got the all the anoraks, you know, up in arms.
That is so fucking stupid.
Yeah, it was. You've never ridden a motorbike, you come up with that decision.
Yeah.
Yep, correct.
So got that right, Greg.
Good. Yes.
Question 7. And it's 2 points for question 7.
Okay.
What? Now, I think you've got an A, B, C, or D here, unless you know this off the top. If you know this off the top, it's a 3-pointer.
Okay.
What is the length of the Isle of Man TT mountain course?
62.4 kilometres.
Do you know what? I'm going to pay that.
Am I just a little bit out?
If it's in miles, though, it's right.
Yeah, it's in miles, so you're right, 37.73 miles.
Yep.
60.7 kilometres, that's good enough, Grant.
All right, okay.
No, I'll give you that. That's good enough. I'm not giving you the full 3.
Oh, well, all right.
But I'll give you 2.
Yep.
Does that seem fair, Spence?
Yeah, that's fair. That's regulation.
I mean, have you ever been to the Isle of Man sober?
Sober?
Yeah. It's probably, when you've walked home, it's been a bit further than that.
Bits of my visits there have been sober. But
just waking up.
Yeah. Well, I probably think the track's 62K because it took me a little bit longer to get around it than everyone else I was riding with. So it seemed like 62K instead of just 60, but there you go.
There's getting on for 300 deaths there since 1907.
Yep.
And the outright lap record, what do you reckon that'd be around?
It's 130 miles an hour.
136.358.
130. Oh, I was about to say that.
Yeah, I know you were.
136.358.
And what sort of bike would that be on with Peter Hickman aboard?
BMWs are doing very well. It's not an R, is it? The 1000RR.
That's it, M1000RR, Grant.
Yeah.
Well done. Full points for that.
Well, it's a really interesting question in that the Isle of Man has separated the men from the boys in terms of bikes for ages.
Yeah.
And bikes that do really well at the Isle of Man are tough bikes. Yeah. So you could look at what people were racing on the Isle of Man and say, that bike will last.
Yes. Yeah, very much so. That was race on Sunday, sell on Monday, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, and it confounded a lot of people's wisdom about, you know, what were fast bikes. Ducatis have always been terrible there. That's changing now, but you'd never see Ducatis in the senior TT.
Why is that?
Fragile. Mike Harwood was, you know, he won on a Ducati, but it was on.
I don't think they're that fragile.
Well, his bike actually broke as it went over the finish line.
Who's?
Mike Harwood.
Oh, what, in 77?
Well,
talking fucking 2018, Grant.
Yeah, I know. But that was the last time Ducati had any kind of real competitive bikes in the TT. Mm. They're back, and the bikes are going the distance. Mm. But the 600cc sidecar race, most people use a Honda engine, the 650, the 604. Mm. It lasts one race.
Fair dinkum.
Yeah. And some of them wear out before the race is finished.
Just wear four laps. Top ends.
Four laps, yeah. And the effort of it.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's to win the race, isn't it?
Well, yeah. But, boy, you wouldn't want to have to.
Expensive caper.
Yeah, absolutely.
And at that speed, at 136 mile an hour, it only at 60.7 kilometres, only takes 16 minutes and 42 seconds.
Yep.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Well, it's funny because if you're watching the race, if you're on the side of the track watching it, the lead pack goes past and 16 minutes later they come back, they go past again. And you wouldn't think that would be very entertaining. But it is.
Yeah, I imagine.
Yeah.
I must get there one year.
Oh, well, yes.
I'm waiting for my media fortune to sort of...
You should...
build this fabulous career, you know.
You should go anyway because, I mean, it can't last forever.
No. Neither can I.
Yeah, true.
Here we go. Now, this is a question that if you get this wrong, give it away.
All right.
We give you that one?
Yeah, close enough.
Enough for Jazz. Sort of feeling sorry for him now a little bit. Question 8, Grant. You ready?
Yep.
You don't look primed. What is the valve clearance measurement taken between which two components? Is it the piston and cylinder head? Is it the cam lobe and valve shim bucket? Shim bucket? Is it the valve stem and valve guide? What's funny?
I don't know.
Or the rocker arm and valve spring?
You're talking about two different ways of an engine working, like the bucket shim and the
cam lobe.
And the cam lobe, yeah. So the
I'd be going for that one.
Well, the clearance is the gap,
yes,
between those two.
Yes.
When the engine is not compressing the valve.
Top dead center.
It's not top dead center, but you're on the right track. Yeah.
Well, what's your answer?
Well, you know, that's one answer. But if you talked about valves and followers and...
I see. Yeah, it doesn't have to be... Depending what measurement you're taking.
Which system? I mean, the systems are still the same. There's supposed to be a gap.
Yes.
When
the... You stick your feeler gauge in there.
Yeah. So when the...
Technical stuff, this is.
Yeah, when the valve is actually closed, yes, there should be a gap between the top of the valve and what actuates it.
Yes.
Be it a cam or be it a follower,
yes,
or a rocker arm.
Well, let's say cam lobe and valve shim bucket.
Yeah, that's...
All right, fuck. Fun fact.
I got it right, did I?
Yes.
Yeah, good. All right, yeah.
Yes, you did. Now, there's a fun fact about Ducati's Desmodromic system.
Ooh, yes.
As you know, no valve springs. A second camshaft positively closes each live valve, as we know. This allows extremely high RPM without valve float. We know that, don't we? But requires checking clearances on four points, of course, which... four points per valve.
Yeah.
So that's your maintenance intervals, and that's where it gets costly because it's a longer process.
You only notice when you put the bike in for a service.
Yes.
And you go to pick it up and you get the bill and the labour is 30 hours or something.
Yes. But they don't rev. I know it does allow for the revs because there's nothing having... There's no room for sort of cavitation of thing. At the same time, they're not getting any more revs than a valve springed across the frame four is getting. Not now. It's
more. It's more reliable. It's measurable, so that you can tune the engine better.
Right.
Because you know exactly what's going to happen. The valves can't open or close, randomly. They have to do it according to the gear wheels that are driving.
It's amazing. I've seen it at working.
Yeah.
And you know when you get up close to a motorcycle engine, see it work. The repetition. The revolutions that are going on there.
Yeah.
You know, when you go for a ride up to Albury.
Yeah.
How many times it's incredible to me when you see how precise they are.
Oh, yeah. And it's extraordinary that they can work at that speed for hundreds of thousands of kilometres.
Yes. It seems wrong, doesn't it?
Yeah. The new dirt bike has a Desmo engine. New Ducati dirt bike.
Does it?
Yeah. Pretty unique.
Wow. I didn't know that.
And I mean, those things are going to get ridden very, very hard.
They look horn.
Yeah.
What capacity engine?
450, Desmo 450 MX, it's called. I'm sure they'll have a 250 to follow.
Yeah.
450 single with Desmo.
Wow.
All right. You got that right too.
Yes.
Jeez, you've got off the carpet.
Yep.
Now, this one might trick you because it just tricked me. I got this wrong. Sort of on a technicality, but I got it wrong. Which Japanese manufacturer introduced the first mass-produced motorcycle with fuel injection in 1980?
In 1980, Japanese manufacturer, fuel injection.
I'm sure there were fuel-injected bikes before that, but not mass-produced.
Well, I should know this, shouldn't I?
Well, there's only four of them.
Yeah. And it's probably a trick question in as much as Honda tended to be a bit late to the scene. They're the Toyota of bike manufacturers. You know, they wait to see whether it's successful and then they'll introduce it.
Yep.
So it wasn't Honda. No,
it was a good marketing strategy back then.
Yeah, it wasn't Honda. So I don't think it would have been Suzuki or Yamaha either, I think. Possibly it was Kawasaki. So I'm going with Kawasaki.
It was Kawasaki.
Nice work, Grant.
Well done, Grant. Wow.
Yep.
And I got some applause here.
Well, good.
Yay.
Yay.
Beauty. Well done, Grant. That was good. You used a process of elimination.
Yeah.
Weighed against years and years of knowledge.
There you go.
I came away
humbled.
Tumescent.
Well, that was pretty good. Not!
No. Now, the fun fact about that.
Yeah.
It was the Z1000H was the first bike.
Yep.
Also known as Z1RTC in some markets.
Okay.
It featured the first electronic fuel injection system on a production motorcycle. The system was notoriously temperamental and expensive to maintain, which is why most examples today have been converted back to carbs by frustrated owners.
Yes.
So, first try, banal.
Mm.
But you got that right. Jesus.
Pretty good stuff.
Well, now that you're talking about that, I do remember the proclivity of owners to take the fuel injection stuff off and put carburetors back on. That was quite common.
Yeah, I couldn't remember it being the Z, but I remember people doing it and speaking of it in general terms.
So the Z series, the Z 1100 and bikes like that, which were post 80, all had fuel injection.
Post 80?
Yeah. So
they all did.
Well, the Z 1100, the Z.
So they never put when did they go back to carbs? Because they certainly went back to carbs for later bikes.
They went for some models.
Yeah, okay.
But the top end ones were fuel injected.
Okay. All right. Now, question 10.
Another interesting fact about Kawasaki's then was that Spannerman used to get a lot of letters from people saying, the oil consumption of this engine is astronomical. These are new engines.
Yeah.
And
I rang
Kawasaki and I spoke to Neville Doyle, who was the technical boss at the time. And I said, well, you know, what's the upper limit? Where do you consider oil use to be at a point where you need to do something about the engine? He said, oh, 1.5 litres per 1,000 kilometres.
No way. That's ridiculous.
1.5 litres.
Where was it all going?
Oh, just they were.
It's not leaking and it's not burning, is it?
Yeah, well, it'd be burning, but they were highly stressed.
Why weren't they smoking like crazy?
They weren't smoking, but the oil was being chewed up by the heat of the engine and the large clearances that were required with engines like that, because they, as they get hot, they expand.
Mm.
So, but you know, 1.5 litres per 1,000 kilometres.
Jesus Christ,
that's a lot.
Forget that.
Yep.
All right. Now, question 10. Now, this is the last question. Now,
I never thought we'd get there.
Very well. You've picked yourself up off the carpet.
Great, great.
What does the acronym RAM Air stand for in relation to motorcycle intake systems?
Well, Suzuki introduced it, didn't it? The RAM Air system on their two strokes.
No, they actually, what two strokes?
Their 250, their 350. No. These are the old air cool ones.
Oh, the old ones. Okay.
Remember they had a little scoop over the front of the...
Kawasaki, that was. They had the 380.
No, that was Suzuki.
GT380.
That was Suzuki.
That was Kawasaki.
No, it wasn't. That was Suzuki. But let's not argue about that.
Can't remember now.
Yeah. Well, take my word for it.
The GT RAM air system. That wasn't really RAM though. That was just a shape.
Well, no, it was a cowl that went over the top of the air cooled engine that directed the air, rammed it into the
Suzuki. I thought that was Kawasaki.
Yeah, no, it was Suzuki.
Where am I getting GT380 from?
Well, Suzuki had a GT380 model.
Oh, I'm just giving it to Kawasaki. Yep. All right. What does it stand for?
RAM.
It can be rapid air movement.
Yep.
It can be RAM air induction, and it can be a rotary air mechanism. Or C, it doesn't stand for anything. RAM refers to ramming air.
Well, that's probably what I would have said, but...
you'd be right if you said that.
Yeah, okay, good.
It wasn't acronymic at all. Well, I remember then Suzuki did the thing called, the S-RAM or...
S-RAM? No. Sorry, you got me there.
I don't even know if that had anything to do. Anyway, people would be laughing at me now. The fun fact...
Suzuki S-RAM was that GSX-R...
S-RAD. S-RAD.
RAD.
That's not...
nothing to do with it.
That's right.
Correct.
The Kawasaki ZX-11, which would have been the ZZR here, wouldn't it? In 1990? ZZR 1100?
Yep.
I think... in 1990 anyway, claimed its RAM air system added 10 horsepower at 270 kilometres an hour. However, at that speed, the pressure rise is only about 0.15 bar, real but modest. Marketing claimed forced induction, leading some to believe it was actually supercharged. I think that's what they were going for, that you felt like you were getting a lot more air fuel in there.
Yeah, I remember it being vents.
Well, if I remember on the ZX, was it the ZXR 750? It had those horns that came over into the tank.
Yeah.
How is it like any different to just having the side-mounted air cleaner like on a Harley?
It isn't. Yeah. Although they would use cowling to concentrate air.
Yeah.
But it was a bit of bullshit.
Yeah.
Now, Grant, this is Who Am I?
Yes, okay.
I'm going to give you 6 clues.
Okay.
They will become progressively easier.
Yep.
All right.
That's good, because I'll probably get it by the time you get to 6.
Well, I think you'll probably get it, but I just don't know.
Okay, Mike Harwood.
No. I'm going to take a point off for being a smart ass.
Okay. Mick Doohan.
No, that's another Jesus. Point.
All right, I'll shut up till you give me some clues.
Who am I? See how quickly you can identify this legendary motorcycle racer. Clue 1. I won my first World Superbike Championship riding for a British manufacturer that would later cease production bike operations.
Read that again. You won your
first... I won my first World Superbike Championship riding for a British manufacturer that would later cease production bike operations.
Yeah, all right, go on.
Clue two. I became famous for my intense rivalries, particularly one with an American rider that defined an era of superbike racing.
Graham Crosby?
Ba-now! Well, don't Carl, just Carl chuck out names.
Carl Fogarty?
Carl Fogarty.
All right, okay.
Well done.
Thanks.
The next clue was I won a total of 4 World Superbike Championships during my career spanning the 2000s and 2010s. I'm known for my aggressive riding style and my ability to win races in wet conditions, which is, it was good in adversity, wasn't he? He was a dislikable prick.
Well,
Fogarty. But yeah. Then he ended up winning. I think he won Celebrity Get Me Out of Here. Well, oh, that usually finds you out as a prick, doesn't it? So he must have come good. But after retirement, I've remained involved in racing as a team manager and mentor in British superbike racing.
Yes.
I'm a Northern Irish rider nicknamed Foggy.
Foggy, yeah, that would have given it away.
Who competed for Ducati for much of my career. And a fun fact about Carl Fogarty, Spence. I know Spence is on the edge of his seat with this stuff.
I know.
Yeah. As you were.
Can't wait till they get out of here, you can't. just waiting for this shit to be over, isn't he? Foggy won 4 World Superbike Championships. Now, I'll give you an extra point if you can pick 2 of the years.
Oh, yeah. I'll pass on that.
94, 95, 98 and 99.
Yes.
Oh, good. Thanks. The most successful rider in World Superbike history.
Was he riding for Ducati?
Ducati, yeah. He rode for Honda early in the piece. And then must have been Norton they were talking about it.
Well, Honda won the 2000.
I won my first World Superbike Championship riding for a British manufacturer later ceased production bike operations. It can only be Norton, can't it? Norton never won a World Superbike Championship.
No.
I don't know what they're talking about.
Honda won the VTR. SP1 won in 2000. So
Colin Edwards.
Colin Edwards, yeah.
The bloke he had the big blues with, wasn't it?
Well,
that was the rivalry, yeah. Wasn't it?
And Honda won again in 2002. And I mean, they made the VTR engines. They made the bikes to beat Ducati, to show that they could.
The twins were allowed up to 999cc, and across the frames were only allowed 750cc.
Yeah. You mentioned that he's probably turned into quite a nice bloke. I mean, you've got to keep in mind the intensity of the rivalry on the track that sharpened people's emotions, yes, to the point where, yeah, they could be pricks.
Yes. Yeah, they're living in a very high-pressure world.
Yeah, extremely high pressure. And, you know, Mick Doohan's a really good example of it. Like, he didn't give a centimetre to anybody.
Yeah.
He wasn't nice to anybody while he was racing.
No, he wasn't. I remember that.
Yeah.
It was just all business.
Yeah. And prior to him, if you look at some of the early British riders who would lend their spare parts to each other to race bikes and had a lot of fun off the track as well as on the track.
But I imagine riding for an Italian company in World Supers would bring its challenges.
Oh, yeah.
Now, here's a fun fact that you wouldn't know. I bet you don't know this. I have had a bath with Carl Fogarty.
What?
I had a bath with Carl Fogarty.
You've had a bath with me too.
I've had a bath with you.
Yep.
I had a bath with Spencer when he was little.
Yeah, but there were 3 of us in the bath with you.
There was a whole bunch of us. Blackburn was in there as well.
Blackburn was in there, yes. Yeah.
Anyway, we'll let the Mr. Time envelop that.
Yep, okay.
Most successful rider in World Superbike history. That's interesting. 4 championships. Must have been, I think he won 55 races. 55 or 59 rings a bell. He had a bit of rivalry. Oh, they've got, that's not right. Yeah, he did have a lot of rivals.
Yeah.
Fogarty once famously said, "Second place is first loser," a motto that defined his ultra-competitive career.
Correct, yeah.
I don't know if he said that first, actually.
I don't know, but everyone always says that, you know, second is nothing, first is everything.
So there's the quiz.
Well, look,
what do you think of?
Well, can we put Spence? Can we put a round of applause on for the quiz?
Yep.
We could rub a few edges off it.
I reckon probably most of the people who started listening to this have already turned off and gone.
I got bored.
Gone to mow the lawns. No, but. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, I do too. And it gives us an excuse to talk about something when we haven't done any homework.
Well, yeah, we've done some homework. Now it's not over yet.
Now, have you been riding over the Christmas break or just been too busy?
Been a bit busy, but yeah, I've done a fair bit of riding and there's a lot more to come in January and February.
Right.
Can we talk about Chumps just for a...
Yes.
Okay, so for those of you who don't know, Chumps is... we think it stands for the Combined Hacks United for Motorcycling's Perpetuation. So it was a...
Catchy.
It was a rally set up, believe it or not, in 1986. That was the first one.
Yeah.
For people who worked in the motorcycle media industry.
Yes.
And it's been going... This year is its 40th year.
Yes.
It's going to be a very quiet event this year. A lot of people can't come, but that's okay. That's partly my fault because I organised it over a long weekend in the school holidays.
Well, you've been busy.
Yeah, I've been busy.
You've got a life to live.
When you're not looking after little kids, you just forget what school holidays were like.
Well, so, I think you've done well to organise it, Grant.
Yeah, well, There's the jury's out on who actually started it. Bill McKinnon thinks he did.
Right.
I can't remember the details of that, but what prompted me to get involved in it was the rivalry between Revs. Remember Revs?
I do.
And
I liked Revs. It was a good man.
And AMCN.
Yeah.
Now
they were both covering local racing.
They were both if you went
that's
to
how
a
good
race
local
meeting.
Racing was.
Yeah, if you went to a race meeting in that period, so we're talking about early '80s.
Mm.
In the press room, you had Revs up one end and AMCN up the other end, and they were blokes just like us.
And they were both tabloid newspapers, virtually. Yeah,
but they weren't talking to each other.
Oh, no,
You know, it was the rivalry was so bitter that there was no communication between
them. Yes.
And I was working for Bike Australia, I think, at that stage. And, we weren't rivals with anybody, really, maybe Two Wheels, I think, but... And I thought, you know, these people from Revs are really nice. These people from AMCN are really nice. You know, and we're all working in the same field. Why can't we once a year get together and...
You old hippie.
And lie to each other about circulation and all that kind of stuff. So that's what prompted the first one.
That was noble, I reckon, but it was just a great fun to go for a ride and get pissed.
Of course.
That was fabulous.
Yeah.
And the motorcycle press, I can't imagine the car press being able to do it.
Well, the car press couldn't. They all hated each other.
Yeah.
All the motorcycle
Well, they're
guys.
All trying to outsmart.
Yeah.
Whenever I've mixed with that crew,
yeah.
Not all of them, but a lot of them, they're just all there trying to be who's the biggest smart ass. You know, they've been spoiled. Too many 5-star restaurants.
Yes. Yeah.
But anyway.
And they were competitive with each other and the motorcycle journalists. And I reckon the difference is that what we were doing, there was a certain amount of risk in it and we all accepted the risk, but it made, say, personal rivalries seem silly.
Petty,
petty.
Yes.
You know, we were always on the edge of...
How many have you done of those 40? It must be 30.
Probably more, but...
Hard to remember.
Well, no one's ever going to write a book about it.
No.
There's quite a few I went to that I can't even remember.
Yeah, yeah.
For reasons that...
Although that's changed in later years. I remember when I first started going, my first one was 94, I think. And, rollicking late nights.
Yeah, well...
Since the last couple that I've been to, they haven't been quite as late.
No. But, you know, it wasn't sex, drugs and rock and roll. You could get rid of the sex and the rock and roll.
Mm.
But, you know, it was during that period where people imbibed.
Yes.
So...
Not me. Though.
It's got a very rich history. There've been heaps of crashes. There've been, if we went for a ride, it was always a race. It was never just a ride.
Yes. So it's upcoming, Grant.
It is upcoming, right. But it'll be relatively quiet because it's going
well,
to be...
Well, I'm going to try and get there.
Well, I'd be disappointed if you couldn't.
And I'm going to camp if I do. Make it. Well, that's the good thing is I can camp, so I can...
Yeah, correct.
There's a few contingencies beforehand.
Spence?
I'm sick that day. When is it?
You're sick that day? Oh, come on. For the last few years, you've won awards.
Yeah, I have, haven't I? Yeah.
Yeah.
The best digital, still the best digital enterprise.
Yeah.
Well, there's not many of us left.
No, that's right.
But no, it is good. And you get a chance to catch up with the Sydney crew, Seto and all that.
Yep.
You know, all those people that I know and love.
Who've been in the game for almost as long as Chumps has been in the game.
Yeah. So it needs to be a Hall of Fame, I reckon.
40 years. Well, yeah. But it's all going to dissipate because there's no, like, print isn't what it used to be.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, I don't know whether you've noticed.
Yeah, but no, I hadn't.
There are hardly any magazines.
It dropped off a little bit.
Speaking of magazines, Grant, I see you've brought one of our competitors. Yeah, what do you got there?
Well, I don't know whether it's a competitor because this is a print magazine. This is Australian Road Rider.
Yes. I used to edit that.
You did? How many issues?
Oh, 20 or 30 or something.
Yeah. Yeah, we'd be the only ones who read it, but it would be a good idea to write a book about Australian motorcycle journalism.
Dean Mellor edits it now, and he does a really good job.
He's done a good job with it.
Well, good on you, Dean. In this current issue, I've got a story on road safety, which is a dull subject. I know.
No. Road safety is very important, particularly when I'm going to use it as... anyway, I better not go into that.
Okay. So it's titled The Curious Case of Edna Walling, Angel of Life and Death.
You're not going to read it to us, are you?
Yeah, no, I'm not going to read it all to you.
Like
but
once upon a time.
Isn't that a good lead?
No,
like in
good.
A motorcycle magazine, you go...
Fantastic.
It's curious. Who the fuck's Edna Walling?
Yeah, yeah.
And why is she the angel of life
It just
and
draws
death?
You in.
You'd want to read it, wouldn't
yes.
you?
Yeah. Edna Walling.
Yeah. It's a bit after about the first
pretentious,
four...
I think, Spanner Man.
Sorry?
It's a bit pretentious, I think.
Pretentious.
Pretentious. Oh, I'll get out of this one. I'll let the heavyweights go at this one. I think.
Yeah, no.
Do you have an excerpt for us?
Yeah, I do have a couple of excerpts because this is, I tried to extract the point of this
so that I could
encourage people to go and buy a copy. It's the current issue of Australian Road Rider
magazine.
And it's got an M-powered BMW on the cover.
M1000R.
So the first point I'm making in this is that what prompted me to write it in the first place was that everyone was up in arms about the road toll for 2024, which is the latest.
You
figures.
Got your right numbers this
yeah,
time. 30,000 got killed or anything?
No. Well, I'll get to that.
Right,
I'll get to
sorry.
That,
yeah.
2024. Yeah. So. And everyone's going panicking, as they do every year, and say, what are we going to do about it?
Yes.
And we have this ridiculous situation where the politicians only really have one response. They lower the speed limits on highways. They attack poor people who can't afford to buy cars with all the modern safety features.
Yes.
They take every single easy option. The argument I'm making primarily in this is that there's no reason to panic about it in that here are the stats, Greg. Here are the actual stats.
Right, good.
In 1970, the Australian population was around 15 million.
Right.
There were 3.7...
Jeez, that's gone up 10 mil since then.
Yep.
Crikey.
More.
More.
There were 3.7 million registered vehicles, which isn't very many.
No.
And that year's national fatality number was 3,798.
Yes.
So that's 30.4 deaths per 100,000 people.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. So that's the measure. This is an international measure. So deaths per 100,000 people.
There's a lot of information to be found in that sort of term of reference.
Yep. Okay. Jump to 2024, which I know is 2 years ago now, but that's how these figures get released. There's 12 million more people, around six times the number of registered vehicles. And the fatality rate has dropped almost two-thirds. So that's now we've got about 4.8 deaths per 100,000 people. So it's gone from
30.
It's gone from 30.4 to 4.8.
Wow.
Per 100,000 people.
Yeah. Why didn't you offer the bus that story? I would have gone with that. Oh, I'd have known it was that good.
Really? Yeah. Really?
No, sorry.
We won't go into that.
No, we'll leave that.
So what's been happening since 1970 is that the road toll's been steadily declining.
Yes.
It hasn't leapt off a cliff. It did in 1970 because they introduced the compulsory use of seatbelts for cars.
Declare war on 1074. Something like that it was. No Herald Sun. Was it?
Yeah.
There's 1,000 people got killed in Victoria.
Yeah, well, that's possible, yeah. But what it means is that despite the huge increase in the number of people in Australia and the massive increase in the number of vehicles, the road tolls actually declined. And it's on a downward slope.
Right.
So it's heading down.
Yes. Participation's going up.
Yeah. So why would that be? Come on, Greg, you were a car journalist as well.
Well, cars are much safer.
That's one thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Cars are much safer.
Yep.
And they stop better, they start better, and they do everything better.
Yep, okay.
And they're full of airbags. And I imagine that accidents that used to kill people are only hurting them now.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. So, and that's continuing. Improvements are all those things like lane filtering devices, and when you're running off the road, it beeps and
hasn't improved driver ability.
Well, yeah. Another of the arguments I make here is that you can't improve it. That the only way you can keep reducing the road toll is through technical measures, not teaching people to drive better.
Yes.
Because you can't do it.
No. No, you can lead a horse to water.
Yeah. There's an argument, of course, that, you know, people put up that everyone should have compulsory advanced driver training. And the RACV did a major survey of this worldwide and found out that it makes no difference to the crash stats, and in some cases it makes them worse, not better.
Right, okay. Some people, it's just not inbuilt in their DNA to be good drivers.
Well, no, and a lot of people don't like driving.
Yeah, no, I get that. It's an anathema to me.
Yeah, well, for our generation it is, But my kids, who are your age, Spence, it's a functional thing. You know, if I want to get from here to there, you know, I drive. That's how I'll do it. Not well,
they say you get good at things you enjoy doing, don't they?
Yeah, but you know, we couldn't wait to get out on the road, could we?
On my 18th birthday, I got my license.
Yeah, you got your learners as soon as it was
17 possible. And 3 months, yeah. I think. Okay, I got that.
Anyway, so no driver training. The other point, and the main point of this article, is that, and this is the relationship with the pretentious title, Spencer, is that...
danger.
For motorcycles and for cars, one of the major causes of death is hitting fixed objects after you crash.
So I say that again?
Hitting fixed objects.
Yeah, on a motorbike.
Yeah, after you've crashed.
Oh, yes, the sudden stop's not good.
It's the sudden stop. And the reason, say, for example, in the GP season where there's heaps of crashes but hardly anyone ever dies.
They've run off.
They don't hit anything.
Mm. Plus they're tough, fit little buggers, but yeah.
Well, it's not that. It's just that they can come off at 200K an
hour. Slide.
And, yeah, they'll slide. But because they don't hit anything, they're going to be all right.
Mm.
Now, Edna Walling, I guess you can't wait to find out what this
connection
is.
She's a household name now, Edna.
Well, she will be, yeah. She was a protector of roadside vegetation. So, you know, when you're out in the bush and you're riding down a road,
yeah.
And on there's either side of the road, there's trees and stuff.
Yeah, before like the serrated tussock.
Before the fence starts where the farmland is.
Yeah, yeah.
And people used to bulldoze that, and she was a leader of... The fact that, well, she called the roadside vegetation the front garden of Australia.
Right.
And she argued that corridor... that
should remain.
It should be there because animals use it to locate from one area to another.
Yeah, but motorcyclists use it to bump their head.
Well, if you crash and you hit an oak tree.
Yeah, a sudden stop.
Above about 70K an hour, you're going to die.
Deceleration will kill you.
Yeah, you're going to die. So you've got this conflict between
front gardens and death.
Front gardens and
Edna's an idiot.
Is Edna the hero of this story or what?
Ed, where did she come good?
Well, she when she was doing this, there weren't very many cars. They had average speeds of 60, 70 k an hour.
But I picture Edna in between pegging out washing and cooking a roast. How, why is she getting any attention? She's out the front yelling.
She was a horticulturalist. Greg, you can't see it.
No, don't say that.
There's a picture
of her.
Yeah,
that's a bit rude. She was not.
What?
Sex worker.
Yeah,
she was.
Sex worker.
A horticulturalist is not a sex worker.
Oh, right. Sorry. I only got the first bit.
Good yarn, Spanner.
Yeah. Well, yep.
No, by, I do. It is. No.
By Road Rider. Have a read of it.
That
is,
no, you that was quite...
And have a think about it after you've read the article. And we'd be happy to hear your opinion on it.
Yeah, send in your fucking thoughts on that.
It finishes with a lot of practical advice for motorcyclists about how you can not be one of the statistics.
Right.
Okay. So you know, hopefully it's useful.
Oh, no, I think it's good. And that suits print. Mm. Honestly, it's a good print story.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I could read that while I'm having a crap.
Oh, really?
Well, that's where most of the reading gets done.
Well, in your house, maybe.
Well, you go if you go to any mechanics.
Yeah, true. That's
picks
what
picks people and motorcycle trader.
Is picks and people still picks around? People.
They'd have a quick go at themselves and then buy a bike. And go. Anyway, look, I reckon that's enough today because you've done well. I haven't got much expense. You got anything else interesting? Warming. You've been riding a DRZ recently.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I had a bit of a summer break at an Airbnb and out of Colac. You know Colac.
Do you know Colac?
Got farmhouse at DRZ and just had it for the summer and it was really nice.
I reckon that might have burnt down, that joint.
Yeah, shit.
It was right there, really? Kennedy's Creek.
Yeah, that is where the because Lydia, my partner, was playing a festival at Kennedy's Creek.
That's where the fire was.
No shit.
I bet you they burnt down that thing.
Yeah, fuck.
That big old barn one, a big hall.
Yeah, like it was the public hall, like a scout hall.
It was
right
in the
thing.
Mountain part too, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I zeroed in on it.
Yeah, maybe it did.
With Google Maps.
How long were you there for, Spence?
Just up there for a week. Lid played a show and then got an Airbnb, like...
And
you had a band.
You had a test DRZ?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you liked it?
Yeah, I did. But it's a DRZ still. It looks very... I don't know, have you seen it?
Yeah,
Can you picture it? It looks really a lot more modern. It's not an all-new thing that maybe we're led to believe. But I think people love the DRZ, you know?
Yeah, well, that's the point, isn't it? I mean, look what they did with the V-Strom, where they've made the same bike basically for 25 years because they got it right the first time.
That's exactly right.
And you
right,
can argue the same with the DRZ.
And DR650.
Yep.
Yeah, you could.
Suzuki's good for that.
Except, I guess it's... how much do you reckon the DRZ costs?
It should be 10 or 11.
Yeah, it's 15.
Well, yes. Yeah. Right. Okay.
That hurts.
Yeah, that hurts.
Yeah.
That's a fair bit of money for a...
They were 10.
They were. And that everyone used to say...
Yes.
I'll have an XR400 or a DRZ. And the DRZ overtook the XR400 because of electric start.
Yeah.
And I never put electric start on the XR. Sort of killed it. And if you wanted a tractor trail bike, DRZ was the go. Everyone went... all the flash... Flash brands have fallen apart out in the trees and the bloke on the DR just chuffs past you.
Highly, highly reliable.
Yeah.
With lots of great stories.
Remember you and I went riding up the bush one time on a...
Oh, yes, I remember you
falling off a few times there.
Well,
in the snow, wasn't it?
I remember you passing me and then me going over the next hill and you're in the middle of a puddle, like a giant puddle, ocean.
I was...
Kicking furiously because you're underwater.
Yeah. But that was good. I went past you, though.
Well, yeah, except I went past you after the...
Towed me out.
A mate would have stopped and helped, but look, I needed all the help I could get.
With the mists of time, these things have lost any... But I remember it was snowing.
Do you remember that we motorcycle trader gave away two DRZs?
That's right, yeah, it did too, yeah.
As a reader's prize? Two.
How did we get two of
a pair.
No way.
Yeah.
And unfortunately... we said you can take them as stock if you win, or we will do an off-road long distance conversion on them. And the person who won, who was from Tasmania, said she had two boys, and they said, "Oh, we want the big tank, a service tank, and all the other." So, you know, I wasted a week down in the workshop at Motorcycle Trader fitting these bikes out, and then when they got to Tasmania, they sold them.
Did they?
Yep. So
what a different era where you could give away two DRZs.
Oh, I know.
That's so cool.
Well, we used to give bikes away all the time.
We used to give them away all the time.
Yeah.
That really cool CB750 4 cafe bike.
Yeah, you remember that?
Yeah. Geez, that was a good looking bike. I was only looking at photos of that the other day.
Yeah, it was. It was very pretty, wasn't it?
Yeah. You did a good job with that, Brian.
Anyway, we kind of interrupted you, Spence. You were about to finish saying what the DRZ was like.
Oh, the DRZ is still a DRZ, and that's a good thing.
A good thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's yellow.
It's yellow, but I also rode the Super Motard version as well. It's sort of a bit of a weird thing to be, because it's like trail bike, but then you've got kind of sporty road tires on it, so I don't know how to treat it, you know.
Did you have the bike at the same time?
No, I had back to back.
They
got ride by wire now and stuff, you know.
So. Yeah, but it's not really designed as an off road bike, is it?
DRZ.
Well, no, the DRZ is, but
there's an S and the SM, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's just
Supermoto.
It's just the wheels. More or less.
Yeah. Wheels and tyres.
Yeah.
But you don't want a small front wheel on a dirt bike.
No. It's a super motard. It's its own sort of thing. I guess if I'd have any criticism, it's that I just don't really see sort of what the point is.
Well, there's never been a big market for them in Australia anyway.
I think they work pretty well in European cities because they're very good to nip around on.
Yeah. Yep.
They make a lot of sense.
They're
there.
Great to lane split.
Yeah, you're sitting up nice and high. Mm. They've never really Australian market's never taken to supermoto. Yeah.
They're good for wheelies and shit like that. I think like people who like to stunt get them.
Mm.
And I think they're one of the sort of more exciting lambs bikes you can get to, like supermotard.
Yeah, like fun to ride around the city.
Yeah.
Fun to do stunt stuff on.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to ride one between here, Melbourne and Sydney.
Oh, they're shocking on the freeway.
It'd drive you crazy.
Yeah. Spencer rode to Kennedy's Creek on Nobbies.
Yeah.
Oh,
the thing was horrible.
Crab. But you can't blame the bike for that.
No, I had Mitas super softs on.
Yeah, good in the dirt.
Yeah, really good in the dirt.
Yeah.
Now, listen, before we go, can
before I... You're not going to flog another one of your
products. Another one of my products, yeah. As listeners well know, regular listeners, I wrote a book called Ultimate Motorcycle Tours, which was published maybe a year ago.
Yeah.
And I've just been contacted by the publisher, saying they've got 1,800 copies of it left and they're taking it off the market. So they're selling the 1800 cheap to distributors.
Good book,
so
too. It is a good book.
If you looked at it and you thought, I like it, but I'm not going to spend $60 on it, you can now get it for $29.95, I think.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, and it's but once those 1800 books go, that's it.
Yeah, so you'll never get it. They won't reprint it.
No, they won't reprint it. Yeah.
So it's a collector's item.
A collector's item. And
foreword by Edna Walling.
But it is a collector's item. It's a good book.
It is a good book.
And I'd like to present this copy of it to you, Greg.
Oh, thanks, Grant.
I won't sign it because you won't
be able to. We could give it away maybe. Hey,
yeah, give it away now.
All right.
Let's sign it.
First person in with the answer to this question: what was the first fuel injected production motorcycle?
Okay.
First person at greg@infomoto.com.au.
Yep.
And we'll send it on out to you.
Right. Do you know what it costs to post that?
They've got to come and pick it up.
You might have bitten off more than you can chew. Anyway.
It's a good book. I've read it in the toilet many times. Yeah. And that's not disparaging.
No, I know.
And as a motorcycle tourist that I am, it is right up my alley. Yep. Right up my alley. There's a lot of good info there. And
you have a good stocking stuffer.
And you're a very good writer, Grant.
Yes.
You are a very good writer. There's
well,
not
as Donald Trump would say, yeah, people tell me I'm the best ever.
Well, you know, you are very good. You know, AI, yeah. AI, there'll be an AI Spanner Man next.
Well, it's too late for that, I'm sure. I'm sure that book's been chewed up by an AI engine already. Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Well,
an AI Spanner Man could be funny, actually.
Cheap. Well, he works cheap. Anyway. Yeah, let's leave it how it is.
It's coming. It's developing really quickly and getting better and better. Mm. But early on in the piece, I asked AI, how often do you have to change the frame coolant in a motorcycle? And I got a 30 paragraph response.
How you got to do it?
Yeah,
the frame coolant.
There isn't any such thing as frame coolant.
You can't see the frame needing cooling.
But that didn't stop AI telling me how regularly I had to do it and what fluid to use. And if you do it now, I've tried it. If you do it now, it goes, oh, well, there isn't any such thing as frame coolant. But it had to find out the hard way.
There's a few flaws in it.
There are a few flaws.
But it's also in how you're asking.
Yeah, unlike Infomoto, no flaws.
Yeah. Well, we're real, Grant.
Flawless.
Flawless. Well, you know, we make our mistakes, but, you know.
The man who never made a mistake never made anything snag.
Thanks. Take that to the bank.
Yep.
Well, that's been the podcast again. Very great to roll into 2026.
Yep. Good luck, everybody, for 2026.
Thanks for persisting. It was pretty shit, we know.
Well, I don't think.
Do you think it was any good?
I loved the quiz.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, I'll do another quiz next time you.
And I'll do one for you.
All right.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, all right. A quiz each.
This has been the Infomoto podcast presented by Autoglim.
And we're out.